Kevin Barker. I don't know where to start here. I mean, I want to start with the positive stuff. But I'm going to start with this, anyhow. Somehow the Jays are 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position, 6 left on base. They've beaten the New York Yankees because Chris Bassett and the Jays' bullpen outpitched the New York Yankees.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, if you're Chris Bassett coming in tonight, what's a couple of things you're thinking about, Jeff, is facing the lefties, right? He's facing 6 of those lefties in the order. Lefties tonight against them were 2-for-12 with 2 walks, so that's a check mark. You got that taken care of. Then the second thing you're worried about is the meat of the order, right? 2-3-4 in the order. That's Soto, Judge, and Rizzo. They were 0-for-8 with a walk. That's a big deal, right? And then I always talk about this, Jeff, as a hitter, when you're standing on the on-deck circle, you want to watch how your buddy's being pitched, right? There's so many lefties in that order, you're thinking to yourself, man, I'm probably going to be pitched the same way. Wrong. All of a sudden, now if you see your buddy getting a sinker down, a runner up, a cutter up and in, a changeup in, a slow curveball in, and then you walk to the plate, you're getting a sweeper, a slider, a curve, a four-seamer, a sinker, and a cutter away. That's what he is, right? There's no patterns. He's changing speeds all over the place. He's doing it with a bunch of confidence. I really want to know why he started out not having the pitch comm on his belt. I think that's
right,
sort
the
of
transmitter. He didn't have it for the first 2 innings, and then he wore it out there for the third.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, right? I would think that's because he had a probably set game plan going in about the first couple guys in the order.
Yep.
Right, you know, if I throw this, I'm going to feed off of this. I want to get in sort of a groove where I'm not, you know, out there tinkering around and trying to figure out to get on the same page. They probably had a game plan, and then after a certain pitch count, that's when he comes out, he starts wearing it, and then he has to, you know, self-correct and figure out bat speeds, bat pass, and, you know, what that hitter's sort of trying to tell you. Look, when he's got the velocity on the sinker working, the velocity on the cutter's elevated, when he is throwing the secondary stuff where he's throwing it, they're tough takes, right? They're strike, 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 and then it's a ball. It's not ball right out of the hand, so there's not a bunch of easy takes, so... Yeah, I mean, it's very frustrating. You know, a lot of those managers will take out their best hitters against those knuckleball guys. I don't know how this dude don't put you in a slump. Like, you know, the 2024 way from a hitter, right, is not see ball, hit ball. It's always about game plans and what this dude's trying to do to you in certain counts. Jeff, how in the heck do you walk to the plate and have a good game plan? You don't. And then it sort of looks the way it looks and – You know, he takes you behind the woodshed, and you lose a baseball game. So, yeah, when Chris is going like this, it's going to be a tough night for the opposing team.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590, a winning edition of Blue Jays Talk. 3-1, the Blue Jays have beaten the New York Yankees in the first game of a 3-game series. Chris Bassett was awfully good. Kevin Barker, Aaron Judge owns this team. He owns this ballpark. He's got 35 home runs against the Jays, the most by a Yankee against Toronto in franchise history. He's hit 7 home runs in his last 12 games against Toronto, 7 home runs in his last 7 games at the Rogers Center, 11 home runs in his last 18 games at the venue. However, this is kind of a small sample size here, I get it, but he is 2-for-9 with 4 Ks against Chris Bassett. After today, he's now, you can make that 2-for-12 with 6 Ks against Chris Bassett. I understand what you're saying about Chris Bassett and keeping everybody off balance, yeah. Kevin. But is there a lesson any of the other Jays pitchers can take from watching Chris Bassett go at Aaron Judge? Because, again, Aaron Judge, can't say it any other way, he owns his team.
Yeah, it is amazing when you ain't fisheyeing that first base coach. You don't know what's coming, how much, you know, easier it is to get you out. You know, I hate to be the one to raise that to everybody's attention, but it is amazing when you don't know what's coming, how bad you can look sometimes. Look, he's a giant human. Sometimes it's just hard to get all those parts connected and, you know, catch it just right. Again, Chris had a really good game plan. You got a guy struggling, you crowd him. You make him uncomfortable, you get him cheating. You know, he's sort of looking like Bo right now where, you know, Bo's trying to get a little bit too much party out front. Looks to me like anyways, timing's off a little bit, and that's why, you know, you see a bunch of guys throwing his breaking ball. So that's what you got to do to big guys. You got to crowd them, make them uncomfortable, and then you start changing speeds away after you speed them up in. So, yeah, it's a little bit, I think, of good pitching. It's, you know, I'm assuming that Judge is a pretty good guesser. You know, he's pretty good with his game plans, understand what guys are trying to do to him. You know, not so much doubling up on certain pitches. How in the heck you do that, Chris? Like, that's the thing, right, is you're wasting your time standing on the on-deck circle, even watching the guy in front of you. Like, it's never going to be the same. So, you know, I think it's you just go up. You hope that you're looking in the same window that he throws it in, and when you get it, you better not miss it because you're probably not going to get two of the same window. So, yeah, I mean, continue to do that. I don't know if you can build off of that because how many dudes can throw that many pitches in that many quadrants to a big, giant human, and most of them are strikes. I just don't know how you can do that. But I do think crowding him is a good way to start, right? I think that's where you start, especially when he's having some timing issues, just having trouble connecting, all that stuff. And, you know, and then you'd be good, real good with your secondary stuff. Try not to hang it. I mean, it's easier said than done against him. But if you do that, chances are pretty good of getting him out right now.
Well, this could be a very different looking team by the time the second game of this series starts tomorrow. Danny Jansen is back with the team. I would expect that he would start tomorrow. John Schneider telling reporters before the game there appears to be a chance that Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano will be here tomorrow as well. And all I can say is I'm glad I don't have to make the decision about who has to go to make room for those two. Maybe they can conjure up a fake injury for Mitch White or something like that. But in the meantime, Kevin, again, the bullpen tonight. A close game. You know, Chad Green, Jimmy Garcia. Now, Jimmy Garcia did not hit 100 tonight, but he did hit 98. Three fly ball outs to end the game. Tim Mesa coming on. Chad Green coming in. We got to look at it this way. The Yankees did get in town. They did play an extra inning game yesterday, but that was just really good pitching top to bottom. They had a really good plan against the Yankees tonight.
Yeah, I know sometimes it's hard to give coaches credit, but again, it's the Tim Mesa effect, right? You got the best pitching coach in my mind in baseball that's trying to figure out how to force a guy to stay on top of the baseball, right? He's a sinker baller. You get on side of that thing, it runs more than it sinks. That's why the velocity dips. The ball don't end up where he wants it to end up. He gets hammered in the air. You make an adjustment. Now, all of a sudden, he's throwing harder. It's sinking more. You get more guys out. And what that does is it makes it easier for John to put him in the right pocket, right? Brings him in the seventh inning. He faces a lefty and a switch hitter. That's exactly what you want, right, with the lead. Then you bring in Green instead of Garcia because it's the bottom of the order, and you want Garcia to face the top of the order. So it's perfect, right? You're working from the ninth inning with your best pitcher backwards, and you got two guys to fill the blanks. You want lefty against lefties, and then the righty to face the lefty so you can elevate the baseball. It's perfect. The pitchers make it easier for the manager to make the right move, and that's exactly what happened.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. It is Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker. We are here until 10:30. We'll talk about the Jays lineup, but let's keep it positive for now. Johnny in Vancouver, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Kevin. First time calling this season. Great to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you, Johnny.
Yeah, buddy. Just got to give the flowers to Chris Bassett. I really love watching him pitch. I feel like he's kind of an old-school guy, not trying to light up the radar gun, but truly pitching. Kind of like a video game out there. He's got command of all his pitches, and while he's out there playing chess, everybody else is playing checkers trying to figure him out, and it's truly a pleasure to watch. My question is he like a dying breed? You know, because like MLB, all these franchises, it seems like they all just value velocity and spin rate, and, they even value guys who truly know how to pitch anymore. Are we just going to go down this rabbit hole of finding guys that hit 100 miles an hour and then throw nasty sliders, and that's going to be all we see from here on out?
I'll pass it over to Mr. Barker. Thank you, John.
Yeah, that's a fair question. The easy answer to that is the money in it. I mean, that's real simple, right? I mean, I can make more money throwing fewer innings at a higher velocity. I mean, for me, it makes perfect sense. It's like Luis Gil tonight. He's got two pitches. The first 45 pitches, he threw one slider. He threw all four seam changeups. I mean, they were 97 from a sidearm slot, and he was more of a slinger. That's why the ball was going all over the place. And, you know, he still went decently deep in the game. That's how you make tons of money. Like, you don't have to pitch anymore. As long as you can throw it hard and elevate it, be more north and south than east and west, and you got a decent off-speed pitch, you can make a lot of money doing that. So until they start paying guys to change things up and want to do Bassett and have seven or eight different pitches and be able to command all quadrants and get lefties and righties out and be unpredictable, they ain't going to do it. I mean, it's plain simple.
Well, and the other thing is Chris Bassett is what he is because he's 35 years old or whatever it is, and he's been beaten up along the way a little bit, and he's had to learn these things. You're not going to find a 20, 21-year-old dude who pitches like Chris Bassett, and more the game is getting younger. And what do young pitchers throw? Well, young pitchers generally have velo. So I don't know if Chris Bassett is necessarily a dying breed, but I would look at it this way. I don't know, given the way the game's going right now, and hopefully it'll change, but given the way the game's going right now, Kevin, I don't know how many guys are going to be able to pitch at that age, regardless of what they have, because arms are being shredded right now. You know, maybe in your 30s, after you've had two Tommy John surgeries or whatever, you can figure out how to do it. But I love Chris Bassett. There's no way a young dude is gonna have that arsenal.
You got to remember too, with Oakland, he had Tommy John to change him into this Chris, not always be turning around looking at the scoreboard how hard you're throwing. And now, you know, it's okay to throw 91 to 94 instead of chasing the 96, 97s all the time. And now he can know if I have late movement, I can get guys out with weak contact and I go deeper in games and I can make money up in my high 30s. And sometimes it takes a bad elbow to allow you to have to make some changes and turn into this. But again, I get back to that. Still money in it. Like, I mean, it's easy.
There's money for guys like Chris Bassett because they signed as free agents. But you're right. There's no money in it for a 22-year-old kid or anything like that.
Chris is an older guy. He knows this is how he's going to stay around a little bit longer is by adding, subtracting, and letting the hitter get themselves out instead of trying to power your way through everything in five innings. So,
we got to talk about the lineup tonight, Kevin. Luis Gil, started the game with a 1-0 count. He was given an automatic pitch timer violation before he threw the first pitch of the game. Two walks in the first inning, ground rule double, three walks, a wild pitch in the second inning, and the Jays only managed three runs. One of those in a bases loaded walk, one of those in a wild pitch. George Springer, Vladdy lost at the plate again tonight. 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position, six left on base. Yeah, they won 3-1, but Kevin, it should have been about 8-1 after the third inning tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a break. Luis Gil's nasty. I mean, that's filth. Like
he's not in the zone.
He's in the zone enough to make you want to, you know, have tougher takes because of how hard he throws. Like, I mean, he throws a bazillion miles an hour, slinging it from the side. If you're a right-handed hitter, that's filthy. That's why the first 45 pitches, I don't have to throw a slider. Why would I do that? I throw so hard from a weird angle, ball moves all over the place, and that changeup, I can go way to righties, you know, way to lefties. It's just a very tough at bat, right? And then how do you, again, we talk about how you attack Chris. How do you attack a guy like that's all over the place that throws that hard? It's really hard. So I think sometimes you got to take a step back,
this, though,
give them a break every once in a while,
and just say, I'm sorry. I'm not giving anybody a break when you've got a guy
You've stood in the box against a dude throwing this hard from that angle?
That's not the point.
It's not an easy at bat. It's a tough at bat. You just be grateful that you're walking away with the win because of how good your pitching was and how good your defense was. I think you got to sometimes just say winning's enough. Forget about what the 1-for-10s and all the walks were. The dude's filthy. You did enough because of how good your pitching is. You say thank you very much and move on to tomorrow. That's at least where I stand.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You've got to if you want to get where this team's going, you're going to have to beat up.
Yeah, it's called wins.
Like,
they're one win away from winning the series. I mean, that's what it's all about, right?
I suppose. I just don't like letting guys off the hook like that.
You know that guy's giving up three hits in nine innings coming in tonight, so he's filthy, right?
Mm. I think they
it's
helped
like the
him
top
out.
Top five hardest starting throwers in baseball.
I think they helped him out tonight. I mean, again, if this is a lineup that's going to get where it wants to go, you can't have at bats like you had tonight. You know, you just can't. And of course, seeing Bo getting picked off first base, first inning, that didn't help either. But you're right, they won. They won because their pitching was very good. And
their defense is really good too.
And the defense is really good.
I think you got to give Kirky credit for throwing out. He looks quicker with his footwork, releasing the baseball. That was a good tag by Kevin Biggio. Kirky backing up the throw from Kiermaier, you know, in a close game. If the runner goes to second, he probably scores. The game's even closer. You know, then, you know, it wouldn't allow Bassett to sort of do what he wants to do on the mound. Like, they did the things defensively in the moments they were supposed to do them in to win a baseball game. And I think sometimes you just have to take those positives and move on and be grateful that you won a game and you're closer to winning a series. That's what it's all about, right, early in the season.
John Schneider was asked about Chris Bassett's outing tonight.
His stuff's been really good the whole year. Just, you know, he knows how to pitch. You know, slider was a really, really good pitch for him today. He's got seven other pitches, but I think kind of navigating even without his curveball really landing that, I thought he just made big pitch after big pitch. That's kind of what he does. He puts thought into every single pitch, and I think when you see him bending down or talking to himself or whatever he's doing, he's got a plan for every pitch. And, you know, I think that being able to kind of reset himself, you know, with the clock and with all sorts of stuff, he's really good at that. And I think that's just kind of his process at this point.
That's John Schneider talking about Chris Bassett. And it's funny because we talked a little bit about Bassett. I think it was after – it might have been coming out of spring training. It was with John Schneider. And we talked about how our first impression of Bassett last year when he showed up was – you know,
moody, yeah,
you know, kind of fussy,
yeah,
a guy
absolutely.
Who would, you know, a guy who would talk himself into corners, a guy who would outthink himself, a tinkerer, all that stuff. And we learned to embrace him very quickly and learned to really appreciate the fact that he turned the pitch clock into a weapon for him. He still complains about the fact that Major League Baseball cut an extra 2 seconds off it. Mm-hmm. But he's turned it into a weapon. And I was trying to think. I can't remember Aaron Judge looking as off. Now, granted, Aaron Judge isn't smoking the ball necessarily to start the year. What's he hitting? He was hitting 207 coming into the game. But, you know, three homers, nine RBI. But I can't remember Aaron Judge having at-bats here where, Kevin, I didn't think anything was going to happen. I didn't think anything was going to happen tonight when he came up to the plate against Chris Bassett.
Yeah,
which is a strange feeling seeing him in this ballpark.
Yeah, I think you'll agree with me. He's one of the guys as a pitcher that I'd buy a ticket to watch. I mean, I wouldn't have said that a year and a half ago, but I do.
Absolutely.
I would say it now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say it now just because of how hard he works to get through games. And I'm not so sure he's using that pitch clock to his advantage. I think sometimes it rushes him. You know, he misses up arm side up and away a lot of the times because he's trying not to have a ball caught against him because he's trying to sequence things and be unpredictable. And sometimes he feels a little rushed. That's why you see Kirky pushing that button as fast as he can push as soon as he gets the ball back. Like, they want to get on the same plane as quick as possible to allow him to use the pitch clock to his advantage. And just sometimes in those big moments against those really good left-handed hitters, he has trouble doing that. But again, I just don't know how you game plan against. I guess you don't.
Let's go to Matthew and Hamilton before we take a break. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Nice to talk with you guys again.
Absolutely.
And I hope you guys are enjoying the early days of the 2024 championship season. That one's for you, Barker.
thank you for that.
No problem. I just got a quick question in regards to Kevin Biggio and his approach at the plate. So I've been really impressed with like his approach this year. I mean, he's challenging the elevated fastball up in the zone. Like, he's fouling it off. versus when he used to strike out on it last year. But what I find is incredibly frustrating. I can't be the one I can't be the only one that's just noticing it. But the fastballs in the inner corners of the strike zone, he just seems to lay up on it and not even challenge it. I think he struck out on it. I know he struck out on it once for sure, maybe even a second time. Can you guys talk about his approach at the plate? Maybe what you're seeing, because I can't be the only one a little bit concerned about that. Thanks, guys.
Turn it over to you, Kevin. I mean, I was going to say that this is probably the least concerned I've been about Kevin Biggio since he's been here, but I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, look, I think Kevin has a plan that he likes to stick with. Again, we've said this 1 through 9 a lot of the times is, you know, where is the plan? And stick with it no matter what. I think sometimes he's a guesser. He sits soft a lot of the times, right? It's the changeup that he kept fair down the right field line. You got to be looking for that. Like, you know, the guy throwing that hard, you know, you almost got to be looking for a BP hitter to keep that thing fair. If not, because of how hard he throws, you know, you're out in front of that, you're grounding out to first, or you're pulling that foul, then you fall behind in the count, you're probably striking out on an elevated fastball. So I do think sometimes he, you know, is looking certain pitch in certain zones. If he doesn't get it, he's going to take it, and he's okay striking out. And where he's hitting in the order, Jeff, I think I'm in that camp sort of with him, right? You're going to attack an at-bat in the 5-hole differently than you are in the 9-hole. Like, you just are. Like, you know, that's a damage spot. That's not a get-on-base spot all the time. So I'm okay with sort of the at-bats that he has. I like the mechanics. I like he's a little taller. I like actually he has a chance of hitting the ball at the waist. You know, he ain't going to do that all the time because he still does have a little bend at the waist, natural little uppercut in his swing, which, you know, sort of hinders him from getting barreled a ball. But at least he has a chance doing it. And, you know, look, I've said this and I'll continue to say it. Every good team needs a Kevin Biggio.
As long as they don't have too many of them.
Well, you've never liked Kevin. I've always had to stick up
That's
for Kevin
true.
Around you. Absolutely
That's not
it is.
True.
Yeah, I think you were sending Ubers to his house there last year, trying to get rid of him.
Ubers. I was not sending Ubers to his house last year. 3-1, the Blue Jays have beaten the New York Yankees. The Blue Jays are over 500. Kevin Barker,
yes!
The Blue Jays are 9-8. 9-8 in the 2024 championship season. The New York Yankees
tied for last.
2-12-5. 416-870-0590. *591 888-666-0590. We'll be back with more Blue Jays talk right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's a tough ask, really, at that position. I thought he handled it extremely well. Having Jano back will be, you know, good for both of them. You know, kind of easing Jano in a little bit and giving Kirky, you know, some time off of his feet. But if you look at today's game, really, I mean, the caught stealing is such a huge play to kind of keep them where they are in the order, backing up first base, you know, making a mound visit when the clock was running down with Volpe at second. Just little things kind of instinctually that he's done, he's really kind of grown to.
I think Kirky's happy Jano's back too. To play as many games as he did to start, that's really tough as for a catcher. Catchers don't usually plan for that in spring training, so I know he's been wearing it. I know he will never say what he feels, like that's just Kirky, but I'm sure he's tired, so yeah.
Well, that was John Schneider and Chris Bassett talking about Alejandro Kirk. Got his first extra base hit of the season today, did throw out a runner, could have had another caught stealing as well. The ball was dropped on the tag. So Kevin, Danny Jansen's back, or will be back tomorrow. That means the Blue Jays will have their opening day lineup intact. Do you think, given the issues this team has had offensively, do you think that there, at some point soon, might be some changes to this lineup?
Like what?
Rearranging the top four somehow.
How would
you
do that?
Do you think? I'm just asking you. Do you think John Schneider sticks with this?
Yeah, I don't.
Because,
I mean,
go ahead. Sorry.
I think with what the GM has came out and said, I think with the way the manager talks about the first four guys, I think with who's protecting who in the order. I mean, if you are thinking about doing anything, I think all you would do is flip flop Bo and Vladdy right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that, but I don't know what that would mean. Like, what would that do?
That creates the issue that we saw. That just basically creates the issue. The reason that they flip flopped Vladdy and Bo in the first place is to give to not have two guys who are going to be up there hacking at the first pitch.
There you go. Yeah, they want to stay away from that. Yeah, I just don't see what that would accomplish, right? You know, again, you'd have to have serious conversation with the first four guys. And, I mean, they're putting a lot on those four dudes' plate, right? I mean, they basically come out and said those first four guys are going to take us where we're going to go. Like, yeah, I don't know. I look at Springer's getting on base. He ain't getting a ton of hits, but, you know, he's got 11 walks after tonight. Like, he's getting on base. Now he's starting to run a little bit. He's playing decent defense.
Walks at least.
I'm going to go, and I hate to say this because I don't like saying it. I still think we have to remember it is a little early. So, you know, let's let it play out a little bit. It looks like the rotation's starting to do its thing. You know, they're going to get those two guys back in the bullpen. The bullpen's going to be solidified. Everybody's going to have their roles. You know, they're going to be comfortable where they're throwing. You know, I like Chad Greening at the bottom of the order instead of the meat of the order. Like, it just makes sense if they line it up the way they're supposed to line it up. And now if you have the lead from the seventh inning on, you feel real good about winning most of those games. So, yeah, I just don't see it. I just don't know what it would accomplish. You know, they ain't like a couple of them are left-handed. They're all right-handed, so I don't think it really matters. They are what they are.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590-31. The Blue Jays have beaten the New York Yankees at the Rogers Center in the first game of a three-game series. A reminder that Wednesday's game is an afternoon start. Kevin, I wanted to ask you about the second inning. Dalton Varsho's on third base, ground ball to the third baseman. Listening to the telecast, Buck and Dan were talking about Dalton Varsho not going home. Now, it looked to me like the Yankees were almost conceding the run there.
Absolutely.
What did you see in that play?
Absolutely, right. Well, look, I think what Dalton was seeing was it was like a little lollipop line drive, and when it had a hump in it, he didn't really know how far out it was going to end up, right? You don't ever want to get doubled off of third base, because that's a rally killer, right? So when in doubt on a line drive, freeze. Everybody always tells you that. But it's that you have to remember where the third baseman started, right? He was almost either a little not straight up, but more closer to the line with Springer up. So if that ball's forcing him to his left, as soon as it's hit, you should know to go. But again, it's very hard to be mad at Dalton Varsho because you're taught to, when in doubt, freeze on a line mm-hmm. drive. And it did have a little lollipop in it, right? So it was sort of that in-between line drive. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure you'll never see that again because he should have scored, especially how far the third baseman had to go over to make the play. But, again,
but what you're saying is you've been in that, but you can see what his thought process was.
Absolutely. Everybody's always been taught that, right? You're already in scoring position. When in doubt, freeze. If you don't see it down in time, freeze and go back so you don't get doubled off. I mean, it's baseball 101, but just that situation, especially where the third baseman was started and how far back he was playing, he should score on that 10 times out of 10. I'm sure you ask him that. He'll say, I should have scored, and it won't happen again, especially with his buddy. I mean, him and George are locker mates, right? You want to score for your buddy. You want to get your buddy an easy ribby, and just so happens they didn't. Those are things against these teams, especially when you're not scoring runs. Every little thing matters. That's why John was bringing up the throwing out guys at second and the backing up the throw at first, you know, and the going out there and talking to Chris in a big moment against a guy that's at the plate that can, you know, change the game with one swing. Like, it's little things because of what their lineup's not doing that they have to do to sort of go on a little run here and gain some momentum. This is what this is all about, Jeff, right? This is, you know, if you're going to be a run prevention team, like, you're going to have to do all the little things right, and I think they're starting to sort of try and do these things. And that's why Bo, you saw him, was chapped, right? He gets picked off over there. You should never do that. Like, the big giant lead that he was getting, and sometimes I said this, you're a hitter first in the big leagues. And when you ain't mm-hmm. hitting, things tend to go the way you don't want them to go in other parts of your game. And you're sort of seeing that with Bo, right? Is, you know, his defense is where it should be, but it's just sort of everything else, because you can tell he's very frustrated with his timing at the plate. And when you ain't hitting, it's very hard. It's gut check time. And we talk about that a lot with Dalton Varsho, right? it's easy for Dalton just to sort of mail it in because he ain't hitting. But most of the time we don't see him do that, especially on defense and running the bases. Just so happens tonight it didn't work out. Again, this is what I said. You didn't hit a ton and you still won. You should take a little bit away from that saying that you faced the best team in the American League, especially with wins, and you still came away with a win even though you didn't hit and do all the little things right. You could take some positives away from that.
416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Charlie in Jersey, welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, guys, first of the year, and hopefully first of many. Always love hearing you guys. Hey, Kevin, you're going soft. I don't know what's going on with you. I don't know if you're getting old, but this is not the Kevin that I know. But what's going on with you, man? You're giving them a free pass.
I don't care
the fact that they won is great. I'll tell you what. Did you see that sequence of Vladdy struck out at? There's three identical pitches almost. And, you know, down and away, the changeup, down and away, down and away. And the third one, he just swings. You know, I'm telling you, a blind bat wouldn't have swung at that. And this is like, you know, over and over again. I'm not trying to complain yet. I get the win. But what is going on? And like, I got to side with your partner on this one. I mean, if you're looking at, you know, going further.
Wise
year,
man, Charlie.
You got to be
a wise man.
Of course I'm a wise man. This is why I let you guys hang out with me. Anyway, listen, I got a good question. I got a quick question for you.
Sure.
Guys, Kevin, I'll give you the spot over here. What do you think about when Romano gets back? I spoke to you many times last year about it. I know I get beaten up about this. Romano, he has good numbers. When you look at Romano, typically his stuff, you don't feel, at least me, I don't feel very confident when he's up there. If you were facing in the bottom of the ninth, imagine that was Romano, and you had Soto, Judge, and Rizzo coming up. My heart would be beating a lot faster than it was. Jimmy Garcia, and I couldn't say this last year, but I think with the bullpen especially, you got to ride the hot hand. Romano's going to come back. I'm very curious to see what John Schneider does, but I'm curious what you guys feel. My feeling is you stay with Jimmy Garcia. I know Romano was always the closer. Stay with the hot hand and maybe, you know, see how it goes. And if he falters one time or two, maybe you bring Romano back in. But I want to know what you feel about his stuff and what you see from him now.
Charlie, thank you very much for your call, and most importantly, thank you for your wisdom and good taste. Go ahead, Kevin.
Look, you know, if I came on here every single night and talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., people get tired of listening to that, wouldn't they? Like, I mean, it's sort of every single night. It's the same kind of swing, the same kind of approach. What changed the conversation from last night, the night before that? I mean, it's sort of Groundhog Day. Until mechanically he gets more consistently on time and not have the eyes move as much, you're sort of going to see the fanny out using nothing but hand swing, and you're going to see the negative at bats, and that's sort of consistently what you're swinging. So that's why, again, Luis Gill's filthy. I mean,
that he's talking about with the strikeout.
He's filthy.
Though.
Yeah, I think it was not
Luis Gil. No, the strikeout was in the seventh inning.
Yeah, that's a carry.
It was a changeup that was it wasn't a strike when it left his hand. It was a ball
I understand that, but that's from previous at-bats. That's why the at-bats look that way later in games. Why do you think Dan Shulman came on and said he's like 1-for-15 in his first at-bat? Like, it's very hard to build, you know, momentum throughout a game when you're always 0-for-1. Like, it's just mentally draining on you. But the Romano thing, look, I think John's told you one thing. He's going to play the hot hand. Like, there's no guarantee that Jordan Romano's going to come back and be throwing 99 miles an hour with a devastating slider. And right now, you know what's right in front of you is Jimmy Garcia has everything working. He's throwing a bazillion miles an hour. He's not throwing anything down the middle. And he's got lots of confidence doing it. So, for me, I think John is a very smart man when it comes to that part of it. In the regular season, he will play the hot hand. And right now, Jimmy Garcia is the hot hand.
I would think that, though, if I'm not mistaken, John did say when Romano comes back, he is the closer.
When did he say that?
I believe he said that a couple of days ago. When Romano comes back, he's the closer.
Well, good luck with that.
You know,
it's about winning games.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but I will say this. I think with Romano and Swanson back, what you have now is you've got enough depth And, you know, especially with what Nate Pearson's showing, you can almost have two separate bullpens if you want. You could almost have two bullpens in back-to-back days because you got Mesa back, you got Cabrera, there's your lefty, you still got Trevor Richards. He's got the change up against the lefty. Eric Swanson's got the splitty against the lefty. Like, if you want, if you're John Schneider, you can basically have those two. And yeah, that maybe, you know what? Maybe that means that Jimmy Garcia does get a save opportunity. You may be seeing eventually a move towards a bullpen by almost a bullpen by committee.
So almost what you're talking about, they could have four closers.
And
Green, Swanson, Garcia, and Romano. Right there. That could pitch the ninth inning.
I think something you said earlier today would probably hold you. I think it would depend where I am in the order in the ninth inning on who I'm going to use. I don't know if I want Chad Green facing the meat of the order in the ninth inning. But if I can have Jimmy one day, let's assume Romano comes back and is healthy. If I can have Jimmy one day, Romano the next day, or, you know, I mean, you know how these guys are. Maybe there's swing paths that line up better with Jordan Romano than Jimmy Garcia. So maybe Jordan is the closer for 2 days. I just think that what we've seen so far, if you want, you can build two separate bullpens with the lefty in each, Richards or Swanson in each, different guys closing. And then, I mean, that's, again, if you want to go that way. I'm with you right now. You one game over 500. You're 9-8. Jimmy Garcia throwing 99. We saw him hit triple digits the other day. He looks good. We've talked about this. He looks strong. I mean, I would really have to swallow hard and sort of come back and instantly say Jordan Romano is my closer. But I'm willing to bet that Jordan Romano comes back and closes the first opportunity he gets.
You've watched enough baseball. You can close out a game in the eighth inning too.
That is true. You can give Jimmy Garcia you can give him the meat of the order in the eighth inning if it comes up, and then you can let Jordan Romano close. But I'm going to say this: the record's not great. But all things considered, the lack of offense, the wobble we've seen from Kevin Gausman, the fact you didn't have Romano and Swanson, and Danny Jansen is out of the lineup, things could have been a lot worse.
They really could have been a lot worse. They're not hitting homers. Like that's the thing, right? They're where they're at, and they're not hitting homers. I mean, how long can this last, right? It's just a lot of pressure. You see Bassett. Why do you think he's thinking so much? He knows he walks a guy, gives up a homer. They could lose that game just because they're not hitting homers.
It's funny. Buck was asked. Buck made a comment. Buck Martinez made a comment during the game tonight. I think it might have been Aaron Boone. It was somebody from New York asked him about the ball. You know, with the new configuration here, how the park is playing, and Buck just said the ball isn't caring. I got to tell you, there were a couple of hits tonight that I thought were gone. A couple of balls hit in the air that I thought were gone. Now this is just the first homestand. Obviously the roof is closed. You know, it's not hot outside. I mean, all that stuff. But I'm beginning to get the sense that this sucker's probably going to play very much like it played last year. And this gets further to Don Mattingly's point, right? The days of the Blue Jays bombing teams to death with home runs is probably gone. It's probably gone.
Yeah, we haven't heard the swing at what you can do damage on when they've been at home either.
When's
the last time you heard that? When they were on the road, not when they've been home.
that's a good point. We haven't heard that.
Get a pitch you can hit a line drive on. I mean, that's basically what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, maybe put some pressure on, use the base pass a little bit to put pressure on.
They're trying.
The other team. Oh, they are. Carlos Rodon against Yusei Kikuchi tomorrow. What are you expecting from Kikuchi, who does generally pitch pretty well against this team?
Yeah, he's good at pitching in against the Yankees. I mean, that's where he's going to have to live, right? It's glove side. It's getting some called strikes in there, you know, and then changing speeds. You know, don't abuse the slider. He establishes the end of the righties. Don't abuse the slider. He'll be okay. But somebody offensively is going to have to step up. Like, sooner or later, he's going to walk somebody and give up a homer. Like, somebody's going to have to string together a couple hits, get a big hit. Big hit meaning a three-run homer. Maybe get a couple of those, give the pitching staff a little bit of a breathing room. I mean, it ain't like the Yankees. The Yankees in the middle of the pack, too. They ain't hitting either.
That's right. That's very
true. They got 12
true.
Wins because they're pitching. They ain't hitting either. So you score five or six runs, you can beat the Yankees.
Yeah, they've played 7 one-run games out of 16 so far. So you are right. They're not really the Bronx Bombers yet either.
I'm glad you admitted that I'm right. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, blind squirrel acorn.
You and Charlie.
Blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. No, I think Charlie. Listen, I think Vladdy's become a thing. We talked about this. And we talked about it in Blair and Barker. We'll probably talk about it again. And I think your point today in Blair and Barker was really well made. I think we need to look at Vladdy as being a good player.
Until he shows us otherwise, that's absolutely the case.
Until he shows us otherwise, he is a good player.
Absolutely. 25 and 95 don't grow on trees. That will make you a good player. That does not make you a great player.
No, it does not. A reminder that Blair and Barker will be back tomorrow on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet from 2 to 4 Eastern. We are going to be joined by Ricky Tiedemann. Who is, of course, the Jays' top pitching prospect with the Buffalo Bisons. And we will get you set for the second game of the series. Wednesday's game, again, is an afternoon game. And we will be doing Blue Jays Talk following that game. We will be doing a special one-hour edition of Blair and Barker before that game as well. So that'll be from 2 to 3. I think first pitch is at 3:07 on Wednesday, and then the Jays are off to the West Coast. They're off to take on the San Diego Padres, and that will be intriguing to see the Jays out on the West Coast against the Padres, who they had a pretty decent series this weekend.
Pitching and defense travels, Jeff.
The LA Dodgers. It certainly does. It certainly does travel. Mr. Barker, as always, thank you so much for doing this. We'll do it
Thanks
again
for
tomorrow.
Having me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. Anytime, my friend, anytime. 3-1, a winning edition of Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Kingston. That's where I was born. Did you know that, Tom? In Kingston and Napanee. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection.